everyone. Welcome back to the Pathways to Happiness podcast. If you are new here, my name is Nina Lavon, and I am so excited because today I am going to be answering a whole bunch of questions that you all have sent in. And I just realized how long it's been since I have done an official questions and answers podcast. I've been answering a lot of questions on the YouTube channel, mainly because the questions that have been getting sent in really needed a whole long video to address them. But today, I've got a whole bunch of questions that I think I can get to in a timely manner. And I have to say, they are really interesting questions, I think, and really kind of diverse questions. So if this is your first time listening to one of our questions and answers podcasts, please let me know if you enjoy this format. And if so, I can go back to doing them monthly, which is what we used to do. So I'm going to start out with the first question, which, well, actually I got three kind of similar questions. I'm going to bunch them into one question. So the questions are you a minimalist? Why are people minimalists, and what are the benefits of being a minimalist? So we will just kind of make it the minimalist question overall. So answering the first part of the question, no, I am not a minimalist, but I have been becoming slowly more and more so. I am becoming definitely much more minimalistic. I used to be a complete pack rat. I was swimming in clutter. I was completely disorganized. And if you had asked me 10 years ago, this is something about myself that I probably would have guessed that I would have never been able to change. So what happened for me was I kind of had an aha moment that I really wanted to change. And then I went in and kind of went through my own psychology to figure out why I was like this in the first place. And if you want to know more about the psychology of clutter and why you may be dealing with clutter, if that's an issue for you, I have a video on that, that if you are watching this through YouTube, I will link down in the description box below. If you are listening to this through any other platform, just look up Nina Lavon, The Psychology of Clutter, I think it's called. And it kind of goes through the most common reasons why we are dealing with this issue. And I think it's an issue that a lot of people deal with because it is definitely the most popular video on the entire YouTube channel. So you can check that out. But no, I am not officially a minimalist, but I can definitely see the draw that people have towards minimalism. And I think as a culture, it's good that we're kind of going, you know, in that direction. Minimalism is really kind of the opposite of every advertisement we see on television or on the radio or on social media. We are really brought up to believe that the accumulation of stuff is so important, and consumerism is just a huge part of our society. So it makes a lot of sense. We, you know, take great pride in our material possessions a lot of times, and that leads to debt, it leads to clutter, it leads to a lot of noise and distractions in our life in a lot of cases. So it can be something that turns out to be very negative for a lot of people, which becomes the draw to minimalism. But this is definitely not the case for everybody. A lot of people can accumulate a lot of stuff and it actually brings them joy. And I think also some people can take minimalism to an extreme sometimes where they end up being unhappy because they are basically left with nothing else because they've given up everything, which again could work for some people, but there's just no magical answer that works for every single person. I know the last time that I moved, or two times ago that I moved, I think, or maybe even three, I've moved around so much lately, I just threw out so much stuff. I threw away and gave away, I would probably say, a good 80% of everything I owned at the time, which was huge for me. And believe it or not, I still had so much stuff because for so many years, I really didn't give away anything. So when I did this, even though you would look at everything I still own and you would never say that I would be a true minimalist, having less possessions has really, you know, helped me immensely. I feel like I have created more room for what is important in my life. I feel that creating this space has granted me a lot of peace. I feel much less claustrophobic. I feel like I have a lot more freedom. I have less things that I have to kind of keep track of. And honestly, for me, everything was so disorganized that it's not like I was really enjoying the things that I had. In many cases, I didn't even realize I still had a lot of these things, so they weren't getting put to use. And I've also learned as I've gotten older that I am happier when I focus less on material possessions. I would much rather have experiences. And again, every single person is different. And, you know, we don't want to say that one way of life is better than another way. We have to see what works for us. But I can say that many people find that it does bring more happiness to their life to declutter and to kind of pare things down to what is truly valued and necessary. And it brings a lot of peace of mind for many people. But again, I don't ever like to say the word always or for everyone. It all has to come down to your own personal judgment, and people are just very, very different. But am I personally a minimalist? I am not, but I can definitely see myself continuing to head in that direction. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next question, which is kind of like an open-ended question. I think it is, do you think things will ever go back to normal? I think maybe the word normal isn't the best word to use. Maybe the question is more asking, do you think that things will go back to the way that they were? And no, I don't think that the world could ever go back to exactly the way it was. I feel that as difficult as this time has been, it was part of our journey in life to go through this. And we are different people now. We have all changed as people. So it would be impossible for the world to be the same when we have all changed. We've all learned so much. We've gone through a lot of suffering. We've gone through a lot of changes. So no, things are not going to be identical to the way they were. But that doesn't have to be a negative thing. I know that there are aspects of that feel negative. We feel like we have lost a lot of things. And in many cases, there has been, you know, a loss of life, or there has been a loss of a job or a, you know, career even, or, you know, an endless amount of things that have seemingly permanently changed. And that has really shifted the course of many of our lives. So I think that our lives have been shifted. So it would be very difficult to shift back to the other direction. However, do I think that many aspects of how things used to be will be back? Of course. We are social beings by nature. We need connection. We are going to find connection in any way possible as soon as it is healthy to do so. And it's amazing how much we found social connection because we have the technology to do so. So we adapted, we found a way in a lot of cases to stay connected. And I think we've also gained an appreciation for things that we took for granted. I think we value our relationships more, and we've had a lot of time for introspection. And so I think we're going to take this kind of newfound knowledge and gratitude, and we're going to apply them to the next phase of our life. And I think that we are just going to be so much more appreciative of all these things that we have been missing. I know we've been missing going to the movies and going to concerts and being able to travel and being able to see all the people that we love. And these are things that we are going to celebrate even more. These are things that we are going to value even more. Even things like the arts. I know for myself, the arts are so important and something that I think is just so valuable. And I think it's been really just so disheartening that so many of the arts have been put on hold. And I think we're going to see a real resurgence of the arts. And I think that people are going to be really energized and more creative than ever because they have really missed this aspect of life. So, no, I don't think that things are necessarily going to be the way they were, but I think things will be good. I think things will be exciting. And I think that it's always nice to have a fresh start, and it's going to feel like a new beginning. I think that we can frame it that way. We can think of it as an ending, or we can think of it as a beginning. And I always choose to see things as new beginnings. Yes, things end, but new beginnings start, and I think we can make it whatever we want. So I think that we can make it extremely positive. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next question, and it is, do you have any recent movie, TV, or book recommendations? All right. Well, if you listen to the last podcast, you know that I definitely am recommending the movie Nomadland. That was probably the best movie I have seen in 10 or 20 years, maybe ever. I couldn't have loved it anymore. In fact, I never watch award shows ever, but I actually watched the Golden Globes because I just wanted the movie to win anything possible, really, but Best Director, Best Film, and of course, Best Actress for Frances McDormand, which I just thought was a shoo-in, and it ended up winning Best Film and Best Director, but Frances McDormand did not win Best Actress, and I was just shocked. And so I said, well, I really have to see, before I make any kind of judgment, the film that won, and it was Andra Day that had won the award, and it was for the United States versus Billie Holiday. And so I went ahead and I watched that movie, and I have to say that Andra Day was spectacular, and she absolutely deserved to win the award. Doesn't mean that Frances McDormand didn't also deserve to win. I think it was just that the performances were just so exceptional this year that they could have picked any of the actresses. I hadn't actually seen any of the other films that were nominated in that category, but I loved the United States versus Billie Holiday as well. And hopefully Frances McDormand will get some type of award for her performance, however, in Nomadland, because again, she just became the role. She was absolutely incredible. So if you haven't seen Nomadland, please see it. I feel like it is life-changing. It's something that I could probably see several times and enjoy it and get something from it every single time. And I'm not a person that enjoys watching the same movie over and over, but this one I probably could. And I would also, again, recommend United States versus Billie Holiday. That was excellent, very emotional as well, but I think it's an important film and I thought it was excellent. As for television, I honestly just don't watch enough television to be able to give out any recommendations. You know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that my favorite television shows ever probably are Vikings, Game of Thrones, at least until the last season, and Stranger Things. And none of these shows have been on for a while. Let me know if you know anything about Stranger Things, if there is an update. Are they going to be, you know, doing this next season? I think the actors are getting close to age 18 now, so I'm not sure how they are going to do it. I know the pandemic really set that one back, but I'm interested in watching more seasons if they do exist. That is the show that makes me so nostalgic for my childhood. I think that is the biggest draw for me. I think the actors are amazing. I think the storylines are really fun, but it's like stepping into my past whenever I watch that show. So I love it, especially the character of 11. I was 11 for Halloween this year. So, but other than that, I really don't have any television recommendations simply because I don't watch a lot of television. But as far as books, I've read a bunch of books this month that I have really loved. The two I'm going to recommend to you are both self-development books. I thought I had read every single possible book on happiness, but I hadn't read this one and it was outstanding. So it's called Stumbling on Happiness and it is by Daniel Gilbert. And it says it's a national bestseller. I have no idea how I hadn't heard of it, but I think it makes a lot of interesting points that I haven't seen in a lot of other books about happiness. I think he has some really interesting takes on that, so I definitely recommend that. And the other book I'm going to recommend is another bestseller, and I reread it after 20 years. I haven't picked this book up in literally 20 years, and it is called Who Moved My Cheese? So this book is by Spencer Johnson, and it was really, really popular when it came out. I think it came out somewhere close to the year 2000, and I know they actually hand them out at some businesses because it's all about how to deal with change in life. And it's about these two little mice and these two little humans and their different ways of dealing with change. They kind of live in this little maze and their cheese gets moved around, and it's how they cope with that and how they handle the process of figuring out a new way to get their cheese. And of course, the cheese just is symbolic of the different things that we want out of our own life. So I really recommend this book. If you've never read it, or if you haven't read it in a while, I think with everything going on, it's the perfect time to reread it. And it's really short. It's short and it's powerful and it has a lot of great points and it makes you think. You can probably read it in one day. So I'm going to recommend that one. It was fun to pick that one up again. And I try when I can to put the books that I'm currently reading when I remember to do so up on Instagram, or sometimes I will take a picture of the stack I've been reading for the month so you can see all the titles at once. And sometimes I give a little book recommendation there. If you want to check out my Instagram page, it is nina.levon. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next question, which is a great one. It is it possible to change another person? Great question. And nope, it is not. We can help people change themselves if they themselves want to change. We can educate them, we can support them, we can inspire them, but we can't directly change someone else, you know, without them wanting to be part of that process or wanting that change to happen for themselves. And that's a good thing, because if you think about it, we wouldn't want someone else to be able to change us without our consent or without our will. So no, we can't really change another person, but we can encourage change, or we can assist people to change once they've come to that decision themselves. So chances are you have people in your life that you wish they would change their behaviors. They have, you know, things about them that you feel that their life would be greatly improved by if they were able to make changes. So I can understand the motivation in many cases for wanting people to change. So maybe someone, you know, is putting on a lot of weight and you're worried about their health, or they started smoking, or you know, you noticed that someone is complaining too much, or that they are not sleeping enough, or, you know, whatever it is. But you notice something that you think that if they changed that behavior, it would make significant improvements in their life. And that is understandable, because when we love someone, we care about them. And so we want them to be doing the things in their life that we think would help them to live their best life. But the fact of the matter is that we do not have the right to force them to change, nor do we have the ability to do so. But there are things that we can do to encourage change, and then it's up to them whether or not they are going to make these changes. So we can discuss the issue with them and let them know why we think it's important. And of course, we would want to do this in the most loving and kind manner possible, or we're going to just immediately turn them off. And then after we have this discussion with them, we need to kind of personally assess if we feel that they're really open to change. It's going to be pretty noticeable if they're not open to change. And if they aren't, really the process at that point needs to stop there, because we don't have any control. Again, we don't have the right to enforce changes, unless we're talking about a child, let's say. But I'm assuming we're talking about an adult here. So we can, again, talk about it. We can see if they're really open to change. And if they are open to change, then we can offer to help in some way. We can offer them our support. We can give them resources. We can help them stay motivated. We can give them positive and honest feedback. We can help them set up some kind of system to help them with whatever it is they're working on. So if, let's say, it is smoking, maybe we can help them find a support group or make sure that we are going to check in on them as much as we can or whatever they feel that they need. And that's something that we can do. So we can help people change in that regard, but the decision to change actually does have to come from them. Okay, so let's go ahead and shift to the next question. And again, this one is a series of three questions. I did not get them all this week. I got one this week and two I had kind of put aside, but now they kind of all correlate. So the questions are, is it possible to peacefully resolve differences in opinion regarding religion? How can I handle family members that don't respect my religious beliefs? And I recently changed my religion after getting married, and my parents are having a tough time with that. Is there anything I can do to make them feel better? Okay, so I think we're basically just talking about how to better get along with or how to create better understanding between family members that don't share the same views on spirituality or religion. And I think this can mean many things. It can show up in many different ways. It could be that everyone in the family is the same religion, but there are some people in the family that are much more religious than other members, or that they practice things in a more specific or more regimented way than some of the other members. It could be that family members have different religions entirely from one another, or some members don't have a religion, or some members have left the religion that they were brought up with, or any combination of these factors. And this can be really tricky because people are just so passionate about their own faith or their reasons for not having one. And sensitive issues in families can cause a lot of suffering or anger or even anxiety. Politics or current events, for example, can cause huge problems. Just look at the last election. But in a lot of cases, people are even more passionate about religion. So it becomes an even bigger issue because in some belief systems, it could be that people are worried about issues that they feel go beyond the grave. So this is a huge deal for them. We could be talking about an issue that is the most significant part of their own life. So again, it's something that we have to be really sensitive with, but it is something that definitely needs to be addressed if it's causing problems between people who genuinely love one another. So I'm going to assume for these questions that we're talking about family members that are all adults and that the relationships within the family are otherwise pretty strong, and that it's just this specific issue that's causing trouble. And I want you to keep in mind that every family is different. Every situation is different. So what might be healing and helpful for one family might not be what works best for another. So we have to keep our own family and our own family members in mind. So I want to kind of, to answer this, mainly focus on the idea of getting along and of being mutually respectful, because it's easy to feel that boundaries are being crossed or we are being disrespected when we are talking about such a sensitive issue. And a lot of times boundaries are crossed because a family member might feel that it is such an important issue for them that however they are communicating this to you, it doesn't matter, that the ends are going to justify the means, if that makes sense. So I think no matter what side of the issue we're on, I think we need to start with taking an assessment of our own feelings. What exactly about this issue is bothering us so much? I'm sure we can brush aside differences in other areas. So why is this one so tricky? Is it because we feel that we are disappointing other people? Is it that we don't feel like we're going to meet someone else's expectations? Is it that we feel that we are being forced into being dishonest somehow or disingenuous because we are afraid to share our true opinion? Are we unhappy with how the topic is being approached or addressed? Are we worried about the choices of other people and what their future will hold? We have to know, no matter what side of the fence we are on, what the real concern is for us and why this is hurting us so much. And we really need to be honest with ourselves. We want to try not to, at this stage of the game, not to police our thoughts. Even when we say them out loud and we feel like, wow, I really shouldn't feel this way, we need to know how we are feeling. So at this point, we need to be honest with ourselves so we can get to the bottom of how we really are feeling at this moment. We also have to determine if the topic is negatively affecting our relationship or if it's just our own reactions or opinions that is making it problematic. Again, we need to get to the bottom of what the issues are from our perspective and why this is creating suffering for us. So once this is clear, we then need to figure out what our ultimate goal is here. Is the goal not to discuss the topic anymore? Is the goal to communicate how we are feeling? If the goal is secretly that we want to try to change someone else's mind, we need to ask ourselves if we really think that that is fair to do so. Is this how we'd want other people to approach us? Do we want others to try to directly influence our beliefs or choices? So we have to be communicating in a way that is loving and respectful. We have to be honest with ourselves. Is that what is actually happening? And this goes for both sides. If we have a relationship where we want to be able to discuss anything, we have to set up boundaries to make it feel safe to do so. And if we want this to be a topic that isn't discussed at this time, we have to be honest about that too. And that's why open and honest communication is so important. In any relationship where there is true love and true respect, we always need to be considerate of the other person's feelings and their opinions. That doesn't mean that we have to agree or that we will agree. And guess what? In a lot of cases, no matter how long we discuss something, we're never going to come to the same conclusion. We are different people. We've had different lives. We have different genetics. We've had different experiences, and we're just not going to get to the same point. And that doesn't mean that we have to allow this to be a conversation that comes up continuously unless we are okay with that. We could make it clear that we want to have a heart-to-heart, but after that, maybe focus on other things. And I know this sounds a lot easier to just say than to do in practice, but these conversations happen. They can be extremely beneficial, and it is always good to put things on the table and to be honest instead of secretly feeling angry or resentful or feeling like we aren't being respected. When we can communicate these things, it kind of sets us free in a way, even when, again, we ultimately do not come to the same conclusion. And I'm really trying to address both sides of this because it's difficult really to be on either side of this situation. And again, I personally think that honesty really is the best policy, but I know that sometimes people can have reservations about doing this, or honesty wasn't something that was really accepted with this specific topic. And I think it has to start with mentally acknowledging that the intent of either party is not to harm the other person. Now, there may be harm that is happening, that is true, but generally, that isn't the intent of the person. The intent is whatever outcome that they are desiring you to have, which again, we talked about, is something that they don't really have the ability to change, but they have that desire to change. But we have to understand that although we should be honest and listen to others' point of view, at the end of the day, it is their life to lead. And again, there's going to be differences, and that is okay. If you are a person that wants to share your viewpoint, make it clear to the other person that you are not trying to change their mind. You are just trying to share your own thoughts and your own experience and your own perspective. And that's fair for you to do. You can share your thoughts. You can share your perspective. That's what loved ones do. They share between one another. And no matter what, we want to make sure that we never, ever, ever use the words, "You're wrong." You will lose the respect of that person, and you will also likely shut down that conversation. So going specifically to the person that wrote in that their parents weren't okay with them changing to their husband's religion, I know that can be really tough. Religion can be associated strongly with identity, so it may feel to them like they are losing a part of you, or that you are somehow drifting away from the family by making that decision. And in this case, it's important to let them know that your love and affection is still there, but that this was a decision that was important to you and important to your family, and it would mean a lot to you if they could respect that. We have to try to see it from their point of view, and we have to remember that, you know, they love us. That is why they have the concern, or that is why they have the fear of loss. But if we can help assure them that you may be changing your religion, but your affection isn't changing, that could be helpful. It could be that, again, family members will ultimately completely disagree on, you know, the decision that was made, but as a family, it is something that they can learn to accept and to get past. And it may just come to, after an honest and loving conversation, that the topic really isn't brought up too much if it continues to cause problems. And again, the most important thing to remember in this circumstance, or in any circumstance, in any relationship that we ever have, is respect. Respect, respect, respect. We need to be calm and understanding even during arguments, because again, we are talking with people that really do love us and do care about us. And in many cases, simply believe that we are not doing what is right for us. So we need to be careful about being rude or condescending, about rolling our eyes or anything like that. We have to accept that other people do have fears or concerns for us, and we just need to assure them that no matter what we believe, it is something that we have given a lot of thought to, that we aren't disagreeing with their perspective out of nowhere. It is simply our authentic choice for this part of our life. In the end, we all need to love others for who they really are, not who we wish they would be or what we wish they believed, just for who they actually are. And it's a tricky topic. But again, communication is key. So to answer the question, how can religious differences be resolved? Well, they can't always be, but that doesn't mean that it has to cause a split. The goal is to work towards not allowing these differences to harm the relationship. And again, that simply comes down to understanding, love, and respect. Okay, I think we really only have time for one more question, so I think there may have to be a part two, but let me go ahead and read this question because this is one that I get all the time. So I think this one is very relatable and the perfect one to kind of wrap things up. And the question is, I can't find a passion or a purpose, and I know you always say that it is essential for having a life that feels meaningful. Mine definitely doesn't. How can I find some kind of purpose? So thank you so much for sending in that question. And again, this is something that I have heard over and over and over again. So you are definitely not alone if you are feeling like this. So I think that firstly, finding a passion or a purpose is going to come down to introspection. But I also want to say that your purpose in life or whatever passion you have, these are not things that you have to decide on and then they ultimately guide your life. These are things that can change thousands of times throughout your lifetime. Not everybody has a singular passion or a singular purpose. It can happen, or people can feel like it can happen, but I wouldn't say that that happens that often. I think for many people, it changes throughout their lives, and you know, it has to do with what stage of life they are at that moment. So you may have a different purpose when you are age 10 and a different purpose when you are age 60. Clearly you are in different circumstances and you're in different situations and you evolve as a person as well. So that's something to keep in mind. But also, please know that it does not have to be something that specific. So while you are in this process of examining yourself and in this process of introspection, you can kind of create a purpose for yourself. You can decide on a purpose, even if you feel that that is going to ultimately change at some point. So something that I like to tell people that they can do is, in addition to taking care of yourself and meeting your own needs, you can create a very simple and rewarding purpose while you explore what you feel is going to make your life feel meaningful. And whenever I feel unfocused or unclear in this area, I just kind of boil it down to kind of two things: making the world a better place somehow, to make it more beautiful, to make it more loving, and to do something kind for other people. Try to help reduce their suffering in some way. If we think about this as being a part of our life or a part of our purpose every single day, we are going to feel instantly that our life has meaning because we are directly impacting the lives of others, which, guess what, brings us so much joy and purpose to our own life. So I think a lot of times people just overthink it and don't think that something so simple can bring so much meaning to our life, but it certainly can. And remember, we're not saying that this is the ultimate purpose unless you want it to be. It is something that we can kind of start on while we figure out what our path is going to be, find out what our passions are. This is something that truly can make us feel good because we are enhancing the lives of other people. So some of the things that we could do could be, we could donate blood, we could hold the door open for people, we can make sure that we always say hello when we cross paths with people, we could bring food items to share at work, we could bring a trash bag on a walk and pick up trash. We could start a kindness chain. That's always fun. If we have the financial means, we could pay for someone's bill for their, you know, coffee or their toll or their even their groceries if we're able to do something like that. But basically, we can just help people in need in any way that we can, or compliment them, or do simple things like carry their groceries for them, or donate books that we don't need anymore, help someone move, help someone that is struggling in some way. There's just endless things that we can do to enhance the lives of other people or to reduce their suffering in some way. And it can be really fun to get creative and think of different things that we can do. So that's something that we can think about. And so that's how I'm going to answer that question. If you don't know what your purpose is right now, that's totally fine. Your life can still be meaningful, and this can be a very valid and wonderful purpose to have while you engage in introspection. And again, that doesn't mean that we want to ignore our own needs or not take care of ourselves. We certainly have to do that as well. But this is something that you can think of as being a focus of every single day. You can make this a part of your day. So I think that is the last one we can get to this time. I want to thank you so much for sending in these amazing questions and for the other questions that I wasn't able to get to this time, but I definitely will. Please also keep them coming. You can email me your questions at nina.lavonne@gmail.com, and that is spelled nena.lavonne@gmail.com. You can also reach me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @NinaLavonne, and you can also reach me through Instagram, and my Instagram is nina.lavonne. So I thank you so much for spending time with me. I thought this was really fun. I always think it is so inspiring to read your questions and also to read, you know, what you say in the comments. I think a lot of you really help add to the community and add to the conversation. So I really appreciate your feedback and your thoughts. And I just want to remind you to go ahead and become a subscriber if you aren't already part of the community, both here at the podcast and on the Nina Lavonne YouTube channel, which is just called Nina Lavonne. So I'm going to leave it there. Again, I thank you so much for listening today, and I greatly look forward to talking to you next time. Have an amazing week, guys. I will see you soon.